I just received a new credit card, one that is embedded with a computer chip, which is supposed to cut down on credit card fraud. This new card replaces the one that was blocked just days before because someone somehow had obtained my credit card number and was fraudulently charging up a storm in Mexico. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, August 10th. We are going to talk about credit card fraud and identity theft and how to spot this fraud, how to avoid it, what to do if you fall victim to it. And we will welcome your experiences and your questions for our guest expert at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is John Alzheimer, president of the Alzheimer Group, LLC, formerly with FICO and Equifax. He has been an expert witness in more than 170 cases involving credit card reporting and credit scoring issues. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me, Joy.
Yeah, thanks for being back with us. I know that you have been on with us before talking about credit card issues. And I was the one who experienced, it's unnerving when you get a phone call, kind of late at night for me. And it was credit card fraud services asking if I had been charging up these items in Mexico, and of course I had not. I couldn't figure it out. I was hanging on to my card, saying, "How did someone get my number? How did someone get my number?"
Yeah, so that's the grand mystery: is how in the world do most fraudsters get their hands on your information? I mean, all you have to do is flip on the television, and every few weeks there's pretty significant coverage of some sort of major data breach, from Target to Home Depot to Chase, the list just goes on and on. And so those types of breaches we are aware of, and we know what's happened, and we know how to react to them. But when you take your card and use it at a store or online or at a restaurant, you don't really know what happens to the information once you swipe it through the little reader. And in many cases, the breach into your card has been accomplished by low-tech fraud technology, like, for example, a skimmer, which is a small piece of hardware that someone can carry around with them, and when they're taking your card and using it for some sort of payment, they just take your card and swipe it through the skimmer, which then remembers all your information. They go on with your transaction, give you your card, and you go on with your day. And a month or two later, they take that skimmer, which is now loaded with hundreds or perhaps even thousands of card numbers, and they'll take it and actually sell it to fraudsters who will replicate the card and then go out and try to use it, like in your example, on a shopping spree in Mexico. And the beauty about it is, the credit card issuers aren't stupid, and they use very sophisticated fraud software to identify atypical usage patterns like yours and then get on the horn real quick and verify, hey, look, Joy, are you actually in Mexico going nuts with your credit card, or is this some sort of fraudulent type of activity? And once they identify it, then the wheels are in motion to shut all that stuff down, and you're not liable for any of the purchases or the financial aspect of it. At this point, it really just becomes an inconvenience for you.
Right, and they were really fast about this, and they did stop a number of charges before they even went through because they were very suspicious, the 6 cents charge to someplace.
Yep.
Just to find out if it was going to work.
That's right. That's what some people call the testing the weaknesses in the fence. You know, they're going to $5 here, $7 here. I had one a few years ago where they stole my American Express card and used it for a 75-cent parking meter just to see if the card actually worked. And then they went and tried to buy hundreds and hundreds of gift cards at various retailers, converting the stolen credit card into gift cards. And that's when the fraud software alerted me or alerted the issuer, and then they called me. So I think most of us have gone through that type of scenario, which is one of the reasons why the Fair Credit Billing Act was written and is so aggressive as it is. That's the federal statute, for those of you who are not familiar with it, that caps your liability on credit card, on the financial side of credit card fraud, to no more than $50. And all four of the major credit card networks, Visa, MasterCard, Amex, and Discover, all have zero liability policies on top of that. So as long as you eventually notify them that you feel like something is going on or respond to those phone calls when they call you from their fraud departments, then you're not going to be held liable for any of it.
I was curious, do the credit card companies then absorb that fraudulent charge should one go through, or do they just not pay the retailer?
Well, it's a little bit from column A and a little bit from column B. It mm-hmm. depends. In many cases, if the transaction has gone through, they will try to bill it back to the retailer. In some cases, however, depending on the relationship and agreements they have with the retailers, they'll just absorb the cost themselves. You know, what's interesting is we always look at this and say, well, look, it's a big bank. It's not that much money. They make billions of dollars. So who cares if they have to swallow a couple hundred million dollars in fraud? They're not actually swallowing it. Mm-hmm. They may be swallowing it initially, but it's all being subsidized off of our backs by slightly higher interest rates, higher ATM fees, debit card. Just, a fee is a fee is a fee, and as long as they can subsidize the cost of the fraud somehow, then they're actually fine with it. What we would like to do, and this, which is what these new cards are supposed to do, is they're supposed to actually either significantly reduce the amount of credit card fraud or eliminate it altogether.
Yeah, and I want to talk about how that's supposed to happen, but I'm curious, sure. When you mentioned that maybe somebody had this skimmer and collected my credit card number maybe even months ago. It wasn't necessarily that last business that I was at that somehow got my number and gave it to a thief.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think the knee-jerk reaction, and it makes perfect sense, is that when you get a phone call from a credit card issuer saying, hey, look, we think someone has compromised your account information, you immediately think back, okay, I just used it at the grocery store. I just used it to buy some shoes online. It must be one of those. Mm-hmm. And in reality, the breach into your information or the theft of your information could have taken place many months, if not years ago, depending on how long ago your card was reissued and the expiration date. So you really don't know how it happened. What you do know is that it did happen, and they're going to reissue a new card with a new account number, and in many cases they'll overnight it to you so that you don't skip a beat, and you just make sure you have to change all your auto debit types of transactions so it doesn't they don't continue to try to debit against the card that is now closed.
They didn't skim my number years ago because I had just replaced that card from mm-hmm. the actual old fashioned theft. Somebody stole my wallet and used my credit card and this time did get quite a few thousands of dollars worth of transactions before that was caught because it was right here in town. And so maybe the credit card fraud people were not, they weren't tipped off as much by maybe they thought I would go to that gas station or I would go to that shoe store.
But yeah, that's exactly right. There's another reason why that probably happened. Not only the proximity of the charges made sense because that's where in your vicinity, but also they have the physical card, and that makes also a big difference versus someone who's sitting there trying to use a card online. When you have the physical card, it tends to fool the system into thinking that it really is you, and then you add on top of that the fact that it's local, and then it really is hard to identify those types of fraudulent charges.
You know, is there when the physical card theft happened? I wondered. Nobody asks to see CID or see your signature anymore, do they?
No, they don't, and it's a shame. Many people who write on the back of the card CID when you hand it to the retailer or to the waitress or whomever. And, every single one of my cards has that, and it's very, very unusual where someone will come back saying, hey, look, I need to see your ID. And think of how you transact these days, either at a gas station or at a grocery store. You know, you're walking up and you're doing the swiping yourself.
Right.
You never give anybody a card. There's a point-of-sale reader outside of the gas station or, sitting there by the checkout aisle at the grocery store, and you just swipe it and move on with your life.
Yeah. So now we have just a minute before a news break, and obviously we'll talk a lot more after the news. But so this new credit card I received that's embedded with a chip, how is this going to possibly cut down on the fraud?
So there's two types of those cards. Depending on your issuer, you may have gotten one or the other. There is chip and signature and chip and PIN. And some people may have heard the phrase EMV or Europay, MasterCard, Visa. That's actually the standard in Europe. And it's actually pretty effective at preventing fraud, and now we are converting to it in the U.S. And really the catalyst behind the conversion was the Target data breach at the end of 2013 that got so much coverage. That chip essentially is embedded with your card information. And eventually, once the point-of-sale technology has been fully upgraded in the U.S., which right now it is not, you'll be able to eventually swipe that card or tap it against a reader, enter a four-digit PIN, and then that will unlock the card information, which is encrypted. And so the hypothesis is that if someone steals your card, they're not going to know your PIN. And if someone somehow takes the information and swipes it somewhere, they're not going to know the PIN. So you're going to have to marry the PIN with the actual card for it to be effective. Now, your card, like most of these chip cards that are being issued these days, are chip and signature cards, which means that if you look at it, it probably also still shows your account number, and it also may even have a magnetic stripe across the back. So that's kind of a hybrid.
Yeah, let me hold you there because we do have news and we will pick up right after news. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about credit card fraud. Talking with a guest expert on why this is happening seemingly so much these days and how we might try to prevent it and what to do if we fall victim to it. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is John Alzheimer, president of the Alzheimer Group, LLC, an expert when it comes to credit reporting and credit scoring issues and credit card fraud. Also, we'll talk with him a little bit about protecting our identities, too. We were just before news time, John, talking about the new credit cards with chips, and you said most of the ones that are being issued now are the hybrid, which are it has a chip, but it also requires the signature.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So think of the old-fashioned card, the ones that we used, you know, up until a couple of years ago, and those are the ones with the magnetic stripe on the back, and you'd swipe it through a reader, and you would either sign the keypad, or if you use it at a restaurant, for example, they'd bring you the paper receipt, and you'd sign the receipt. That's an old-fashioned mag stripe card. The hybrid that we're being given, which is kind of like the baby step towards the more secure chip and PIN card, this hybrid has the chip in it. It's almost like an experiment, if you will, but it also still has the magnetic stripe in the back. And so when you use it, you're still being swiped through a reader, and it's still printing out either a paper receipt for you to sign or it's asking for you to sign at the point-of-sale terminal. It's not as effective as it's going to be when the infrastructure is actually in place and all of the retailers have the new point-of-sale machines, which can actually read the encrypted information off of the PIN. Then it's going to ask you, instead of a signature, and it's going to ask you to enter a PIN. And so the PIN plus the information off of the chip is going to equal your account information. Then they'll be able to charge the card. And, of course, it's going to be much more difficult for a thief who, if they, in your scenario, for example, if they steal your wallet or steal your purse or end up with your physical card somehow, it's going to be useless because they're not going to have the PIN. They may go try to use it somewhere, but they're not going to have the PIN to marry with it, so they're not going to be able to abuse the card.
Yeah, good. Right now, I know a number of people posted, when I mentioned my plight on Facebook, a lot of people, a lot of people were chiming in on how this had happened to them, and a lot of people said, I have the new chip card, and in fact, my producer, director, Christy Taylor, has the chip and signature card, the hybrid, and it was breached, I guess, and stolen, even though she still had the physical card, twice in a one-month period.
Yeah, that's right. And again, the chip and signature card is not the destination. That's not what we're going to all end up with in a couple of years. Those cards still have the old magstripe technology, and they're not any more secure than the old-fashioned cards that we used up until a couple of years ago. So, yes, you're going to have many scenarios and stories like that where the card has been stolen or it's been skimmed, and it's being abused just like it was pre-chip in the pre-chip days. So yes, that you should not feel any sort of sense of safety or security just because of these newer chip cards until we get to a time where your card number is not embossed on the actual physical card, you flip it over on the back and there is no magnetic stripe, and your bank issues you a PIN associated with the card, then you can start feeling a little bit more secure that if the card is physically taken, that the thief isn't going to have any way to use it, unless you do something silly, like write your PIN number on the one side of the card, or some people actually have little credit card holders that they'll slide their card into. And if you're silly enough to write the PIN on that, then obviously they'll continue to be able to use the card. And here's the bad news is there is going to be a push to shift liability off of the credit card issuer onto the credit card user, which is me and you and all your listeners. If eventually we end up with chip and PIN and the card gets abused, there's only one way that could have happened, and guess what that is? You were irresponsible with your PIN. So either you told somebody the PIN, or you weren't securing it, or you wrote it. I mean, you know people are going to do this, as silly as this sounds. They're going to write the PIN on the side of the card because they're not going to be able to remember the PIN. And so you may end up stuck with liability if you do something silly like that. So when we do end up in the true chip and PIN era, you know, you're going to want to guard that PIN just like you'd guard the PIN to your ATM card.
You know, John, before we take calls, and we've got a number of people lining up, I did want to ask you, with when I mentioned this on Facebook, as I just said, everybody and their mother was saying, it happened to me, it happened to me 10 times, mm-hmm. It happened to me last month, on and on and on. Are we seeing a lot more of this right now, or is it just my imagination?
It's always been like this. Mm-hmm. It's always been very aggressive. It is, the mag strip technology is comical. It is decades and decades old. The U.S. has the most advanced credit system on the globe, yet we have the most antiquated credit card security system on the globe at the same time. So we've truly been left behind by the European market because they've converted to these chip and PIN cards many years ago. In fact, if some of your listeners are business travelers and they head over the pond, if as they say, and they end up in Europe, they may realize or through experience that they're unable to use their cards because the cards that they have, the point of sale technology has been upgraded many, many years ago, and they can't even use their cards. So some people are actually already using chip and PIN, but only when they do international travel for business, because that's the only type of card that is accepted in some parts of the world. So the MagStrip card, this is the same technology that an 8-track uses. And for some of your listeners don't even know what an 8-track is, so you're going to have to Google it to see what it looks like. But it's essentially the old magnetic tape, and that's what we're still depending on. So compromising it is not hard at all. You can buy a skimmer off of eBay. So it's not like you have these high-tech, fraud rings that are creating this technology. It's not cutting edge at all, which is why, yes, you hear tons and tons of stories about this happening. You can even find stories of where people have fashioned skimmers and install them on the outside of ATMs that are in bank branches or in malls or in convenience stores. And so when you go and use the ATM card yourself or take cash out of a credit card, you're skimming it yourself by swiping it through the reader. It's absolutely not surprising that you hear all these stories. It's the way it has been, and which is why the Fair Credit Billing Act is as aggressive as it is, because we really all have some sort of an example where we've been the victim of credit card fraud.
I'm Joy Cardine, talking with John Ulsheimer, who is the president of the Ulsheimer Group, talking with him about credit card fraud and related issues, welcoming your questions for him, welcoming any experiences you'd like to share. How can we prevent this from happening to us? What should we do should it happen to us? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let me go to Perry in Milwaukee next. Hi, Perry. Oh, too bad. Perry had a question about an ad I just saw on TV last night for the first time. It was, have one of these, some kind of special woven credit card holder things that you can put into your purse or in your wallet and have your card inside of it. And this would prevent people on the street using I guess, some sort of skimmer-type technology to steal your number as you walk by. Is that even possible? And do these little holders help?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Okay.
It is possible. They're not. It's not a skimmer. A skimmer has. You have to actually swipe a card through a skimmer for it to read the information. However, there are ways to read the information off of credit cards because of proximity. So for those of you who use cards where you can take them places and actually instead of swiping them somewhere, you'll actually set them on a reader or tap them against the reader. They were all the rage about 5 years ago. And a lot of the gas stations installed the point-of-sale technology, and so instead of having to swipe your card in and out of the reader, you just kind of tap it up against it. Well, it's reading information off your card, and so the fraudsters, because they're usually two steps ahead of everyone else, have actually replicated that technology into a handheld reader. And so you can actually walk down the street, and if you can get close enough to someone's purse or their wallet without being too terribly obvious, you may be able to actually read the information off of someone's credit card, and then they're off to the races fabricating a new card and then abusing it or selling it because there's value in the card information even without using it. And so what these little sleeves purport to do is somehow disrupt the signal between the reader and your card, and therefore preventing any sort of fraud. Now, here's my opinion on that. I wouldn't spend a penny on any of these sleeves, and here's why. Because you have no liability if the card is stolen anyways. So if the card is stolen, it's really just a matter of inconvenience for you. So if you're going out and spending $50-$100 on these high-tech, sleeves to protect your card, then just do so understanding or being aware that you don't have any liability if the card is stolen anyways. And the likelihood of this happening to you is very, very low. You're much more likely to use your card at a location where it's actually physically skimmed than you are walking down the street and someone is, actually bumps into you and then reads the card information using one of these new machines.
Yeah, Richard emails, as do many others, I make many purchases online. The company always asks me for the security code on the back of the card, and then someone who obtains this number can also use it online to obtain items on my card. The credit card company tells me this is not an issue. Can you address this concern?
Yeah, when you use your card, the use of some of them have the 4-digit CCV or the CVV, the security code that goes with the card, and some of them are 3 digits, depending on the brand or the network of card that you're using. And it is a required piece of information when you use your card because it's on the opposite. It's normally on the opposite side of the card as the number. On Amex, it's on the same side, but on most Visas, for example, it's on the opposite side. So if you've just you actually have to have the physical card in order to have the number with the code. So it's more likely going to be you than it is not going to be you. And yes, in many online transactions, I did the one this morning before I called into your show, if they asked me for the code and I had to give the code in order for it to complete the transaction. There is no truly secure, 100% foolproof method of transacting online. I know a lot of people talk about, well, don't buy things if there's not a secured server and the HTTP, make sure there's an S at the end of it because it says it's a secured server. There is no foolproof server. I think Target and Chase and Home Depot and I think all these companies that are way more advanced than any of the websites we deal with have proven that there isn't a foolproof method of transacting. And so what I always tell people is not to go into paralysis over this. And if you like to shop online, then shop online. If you like to shop online a lot, then shop online a lot. And if for some reason you find out that your card is compromised, then go through the same protocol that thousands and thousands of people go through every single day, which is you're going to get a call from your lender, and they're going to ask you, is this a valid transaction or not? And if it's not, they're going to ask you some questions, they're going to shut your card, and they're going to send you a new one. And that has become almost the status quo. I don't know very many people who have never been a victim of credit card fraud of some type, which is very likely why your Facebook page gets blown up from people who say, this has happened to me, this happens to me all the time. It is not an uncommon thing. What's what here's what will eventually happen once we move off of this old magstripe technology onto the more secure chip technology. A lot of that stuff's going to dry up. And eventually, even if you don't ask for a new card to replace your pre-existing card, your bank is going to proactively send it to you. In many cases, they have already done so with these chip and signature hybrid cards. You didn't ask for it. They just proactively sent it to you and said, hey, look, your old card is going to be eventually decommissioned. Go ahead and activate this card and start using it because it's got a more secure technology.
Let's go to Dale in La Crosse. Hello, Dale.
Hi. Basically, I had kind of the same question, but, not online, but I make purchases by telephone, and I give my three-digit security code, and I was just wondering how secure is it I'm giving to some company out there, there's another issue, too. I was issued a new card in the last year, and the credit card company sent me a new card but with the same number, and I was disappointed. I basically wanted to get into the habit of having a new number about every year.
Would that be a good thing to do?
Well, I think for some people that seems like an attractive alternative. But remember, every time it depends on how often you use that card for automated transactions, meaning
right.
that say every single month your power bill auto drafts against a credit card, or your gym membership, or your cell phone, or your Netflix membership, or something auto debits against a card. Remember, every single time you change your card number, you have to reset every single one of those auto debit and auto payment types of transactions. And so if you never ever do that, and every single time you use your credit card, it's the first time you're using it, or it's a one-off transaction, it's fine to ask for a new card number. However, if you do have, different merchants that auto debit against your card either monthly or annually for subscription-based services, then having a new card every single year is going to become a pain in the you-know-what, because you're going to have to make sure that every single one of those companies has the new number, has the new expiration date, has the new security code, and if they don't have it, it's going to disrupt your service. And if it's a bill that you're being sent, not just a membership fee like from your gym, if it's a bill like your cell bill, or your power bill, or your gas bill, or whatever, and all of a sudden they don't have any way to draft it, then guess what? It's going to eventually become delinquent. So the rotating or the variable account number may seem attractive, but it's not something that is universally attractive.
I guess I have to. Thanks for the reminder. I've got to call the Wisconsin State Journal, or they're going to be mad at me.
Yes, you, absolutely. See, this is the inconvenience of this. This is the sum total of your inconvenience for someone stealing your credit card. You didn't have to. You didn't lose any money. You're not going to have to pay any of these charges. But now you're thinking, oh, wait a minute, I do have another one that I have to call and make sure they have my new number.
Yeah. So there is no harm to us beyond the inconvenience when it comes to the credit card fraud. There's no way someone can use this information to steal my identity, for example.
No, that's not. And this is why whenever you hear about these large-scale data breaches, you should be thankful for the ones where the only thing that is taken is your payment information, because you have no liability if it's used, so it's immaterial to you other than the inconvenience factor. It's the data breaches where they're taking personal information. Those are the ones that you should be most concerned about, like Anthem, the Anthem data breach, Blue Cross. You can change a credit card number. You can change a debit card number. It's very easy to do that. Credit card isn't even your money. It's a bank's money that's being stolen. So, the sense of urgency is on their shoulders, not necessarily on your shoulders, which is why credit cards are so much better than debit cards for fraud protections, because debit card is your money. The sense of urgency is on your shoulders, because that's your money that's being stolen, where a credit card being breached is the bank's money being stolen. However, when someone takes your information, first name, last name, address, date of birth, social, these are things that you're not going to go change just because they've been compromised. That type of information has tons of value, and it has value in perpetuity. In 10 years, you're still going to be you, and you're probably going to still live at the same address, and your date of birth and your social are going to be the same.
Time for news again, and then we will continue. This is the Ideas Network. So have you been a victim of credit card fraud? We are talking about credit card fraud and the likelihood of this happening, what is happening in the industry to try to prevent it. We'll talk some on what else we might be able to do to prevent it. And we welcome your questions and experiences for our guest at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with John Alzheimer, president of the Alzheimer Group, LLC. And our next caller is Maddie in Wapaka. Hi, Maddie.
Hello. Thank you for this show. Yes, my husband, not too long ago, maybe a year and a half ago, went to two of the local grocery stores, and his credit card didn't work at either one. And so when he got home, he called our company, credit card company, and that was the first time we found out that they had shut it down. And, you know, we were thinking that that had we been on a cruise or something like that, that we would have been really in a difficult position. And I was wondering, how long does it take to get one of those special credit cards?
But, Maddie, let me ask you, when it was shut down because the credit card company suspected fraud?
Was, they said it was used. It was used in New York, and it was used in Mexico.
Yeah. Must be. I'm wondering if that was an oversight, that they would just shut down the card without telling the card owner or checking with the card owner, John?
Yeah, normally they will reach out before they shut the card and ask, hey, look, are you in New York or are you in Mexico or are you doing something? And if they don't hear back from you within a reasonable period of time, then they're just going to shut the card down and protect themselves. But normally they will try to reach out either through a phone call or I even get text messages from mine if they're asking to speak with me. Here, if I can also make a comment about this, underscores the reason why you never take one credit card anywhere, because you just simply don't know whether, especially on vacation, you just don't know what's going to happen, if the card's going to get compromised and then get closed and then kind of leave you high and dry without any way to pay for things. So, you know, well, I know a lot of people are critical of credit cards and they get unfairly demonized, but this is one of the reasons why you do want to have more than one. Because if you put all your eggs in one basket, you may end up with a scenario where you don't have anything to pay, don't have any way to pay for anything.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier that they're getting quicker about it. They're conceivably, well, maybe on a cruise you'd be out of luck, but if you did just have that one card and this happened, they can even overnight cards to you now?
Oh, sure, and many of them will, especially if you're a good customer, and good customer in their language means that you use the card frequently, and so you generate a lot of transaction fees for related fees for them, and if you carry a balance, then obviously you generate a tremendous amount of interest income for them. So they want you to have the card, and for them, it's worth a FedEx or a UPS and get a card in your hand, depending on where you're at.
Yeah. Are there, we have an email from a listener who says, what happens when you shop online with a PIN and chip card? Won't the company request that you provide your PIN online?
Yes, they absolutely will. But much like the information that is, for today, when you use your card, you don't have to re-enter your card number in many cases because they'll remember it. But they don't keep that little security code, the CVV number. You have to re-enter that every single time. It'll be the same thing with the chip and PIN cards, is they may have the information regarding the card, but you're going to have to always enter your PIN. And, again, they won't keep it. They won't be allowed to keep it. They won't be able to keep it. So there won't be any issues with them now having, you know, all the things needed to continue to, or to, if, especially if they're breached, for the credit card fraud to occur. And another thing is that the information on your card, some of these chips actually are going to, the card number information is going to be variable, meaning that it may actually change from transaction to transaction. So, but the PIN number will not. And so it's going to be considerably more sophisticated. And we have to, as card users, kind of break our mold. We have a very flat understanding of credit cards. There's a number, there's a mag strip, there's an expiration date, and there's the security code, and then boom, that's it, and it never changes until the card is reissued. With the new technology, it's a very, very different model, meaning that it's not going to be as easy to, first off, it will be next to impossible to crack because it's embedded and encrypted on this chip, and B, without the use of the PIN, it's really immaterial anyways, because that fills in the gaps needed to use the card. And just because you're using it online doesn't necessarily mean that it's all out there still for someone to breach and steal.
Yeah. Is there anything... All right, so I have my new card, and it's not the PIN yet, but it's the chip and signature card. Presumably, you say in a couple of years, everybody's going to have the PIN and chip card, right?
Well, they could issue those cards today. That's not the holdup. It's not the credit card issuers. It's the merchants and retailers. You can't use a PIN and a chip and PIN card today at almost any retailer. And because they won't accept it, there's no point in issuing them because you have to have the infrastructure to read the card before you can actually start loading us up with all these chip and PIN cards. So it's not necessarily timing on the bank's side. It's really timing more so on the retailer and merchant side to convert to the new point of sale readers. Now, this is where you have this battle going on between the credit card issuers and the merchants. Is it's an incredible investment to convert all of your readers from the old swipey type of card readers to this new chip reader type of card. Very, very. Think of a national retailer and how expensive it's going to be to convert to the new technology. So what the issuers are saying is, look, we're going to have all these cards issued by some date in the next couple of years. If you can't accept it, that's your problem, not our problem. And you're going to lose customers. They're going to go elsewhere. And so it's actually in your best financial interest to go ahead and convert. So that's what's happening. We're in the middle of a glacial speed conversion off of the old point-of-sale technology onto the new point-of-sale technology. But you should start seeing it in the next couple of years. And, you know, if we have this same conversation in 5 years, we'll look back and say, wow, that didn't go terribly well, but at the very least it happened, and now everyone has these chip and PIN cards, and there are fewer stories of identity theft using, you know, or theft of credit card information.
Yeah, I get it. In fact, our issuer of the credit card said, here's your new card. If your merchant has this new technology, you know, whatever, push it in or something. Mm-hmm. If not, you just swipe as usual. So that's some have maybe the hybrid scanner.
That's exactly right. Some of them do, and again, those who do, that's great, but they may actually be ahead of the game as well because most of the cards that have been issued don't come with a PIN. Look at your card. Most people who have new cards have this little funny-looking microchip emblem on it, and that's the actual chip, but they weren't issued a PIN. So right now it's just being deployed using the old-fashioned mag strip that's on the back. But eventually those cards will be issued PINs, and that's what we're going to be depending on in order to use those cards. But, again, you've got to have the point-of-sale reader, or that technology is meaningless.
Yeah, so Susan on Facebook, when she asked why has it taken so long for the U.S. to implement this, Canada has had this secure card for years.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of this conversion process?
It's the infrastructure. If you can't use the card somewhere because the machine doesn't read it, then the banks are not going to issue it because, again, if you don't use your card, then they don't make any money. So this was a game of chicken, and it still is a game of chicken to some extent, as to who's going to convert first. The issuers can't convert because then the people who use the cards can't use them anywhere. The retailers aren't going to convert because they don't have to convert because everyone still has the mag strip technology, and really it's the banks that are eating the cost of the fraud. And so it really got to a tipping point. And I'll tell you what, for all the bad things that happened out of the Target data breach, this is the one good thing that happened out of it, which was this really pushed the industry and got lawmakers involved and put the light that was shone on the industry. Exposed exactly what your listener just said, which is that this technology has been available somewhere else forever. why in the world is the U.S. the last to the table on this? And really it was a matter of the retailers not wanting to convert and spend hundreds of millions of dollars and man hours to convert this technology because they didn't really need to do it. Now they're going to have to do it because eventually their customers aren't going to have a way to use credit cards at their stores, and so they have to do it.
Yeah, so while we're waiting for this a conversion to happen, are there shopping habits that or any tips that you can provide that might help us minimize the possibility of this happening or minimize the hassle, the inconvenience of taking care of it if it does happen?
Well, at the very least, you have to have more than one primary method of payment. I think too many people have swallowed the Kool-Aid that credit cards are evil, and if you're going to have one, that you should just have one, or you should have a debit card and not have a credit card at all. And by the way, your protections are not nearly as aggressive on a debit card as they are on a credit card. So I think we have to kind of maybe stop listening to all the noise with respect to credit card criticism. Get two or three good cards. There are plenty of no-fee cards still out there. Don't worry about the interest rates, because if you don't roll a balance from month to month and you don't pay interest anyways, and so the interest rate is irrelevant. There are a ton of good rewards cards that may actually, give you rewards that are meaningful to you, like miles or cash back or whatnot. And then use those cards and rotate them periodically so that the issuer doesn't close them because of inactivity. And then you really are putting yourself in a position where if one of your cards gets compromised, and you know what, you can kind of bet that at least one of them is going to get compromised because that's just the era we live in right now, then you can just pull out another card and continue to transact with no problem while the other card is being replaced by your issuer. And by the way, you have no liability for the fraud anyways. And so really, it truly minimizes the inconvenience for you versus getting, if you just use one card and then you find yourself stuck with no way to pay for things if it gets compromised. As far as usage patterns go, the fraud modeling technology is considerably more advanced than we are as users, and so you're not going to fool it. If you if you live in Milwaukee and you use your card in Milwaukee all the time, and then all of a sudden, boom, you go on vacation and you're at the beach somewhere, the card issuer is not going to think that your card has been stolen. It's if you go out and try to buy $5,000 of leather furniture online that's going to start tripping.
And we're going to have to leave it there. And I hope you'll come back and we'll talk more about identity theft the next time. John Alzheimer is president of the Alzheimer Group. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.